Expressed during the drive time are those of Dave Glover and his guests and are not those of Northumberland 89.7. Agree, disagree, or have a comment? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now your host, Dave Glover.
And welcome to the Drive Time. Welcome back to the Drive Time. Joining me in the studio right now is your Member of Parliament for Northumberland, Peterborough South, Kim Rudd. Kim, welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you, Dave. It's always a great pleasure to be here.
Now, Kim's very relaxed, listeners, just so you know. She's just come from a very relaxing hair appointment at one of the finest spas in town, I got to say.
And that's just because you and I've known Vicky for 40 years.
I haven't known her for that long, but she does incredible work over at the spa. And, you know, as you said, you know, when you go in there for the hair, you know, you get that.
You're just going in to get your hair done. You come out feeling relaxed.
Yeah. It's true. Yeah. It's a total zen experience over there. And that's Mystic Roots on Division Street. Cheap plug right there. Lots to talk about, though. we can talk about, Bank of Canada firmly standing on the sidelines. Do you know anything about what's happening with this complaint from Jody Wilson-Raybould's father, Bill Wilson, regarding the missing and murdered Indigenous women inquiry?
I don't. I saw the report on CBC a few minutes ago. And you know, I think we all have to remember as politicians, our families get to have their own opinion, and we appreciate that opinion, and they're entitled to it.
Absolutely. They sure are. And this is the thing, right? You know, somebody said to me, well, you know, when the Liberals form government, I guess you're not really going to have much to talk about. You know, the government is the government, right? You and I know this, Kim. So there's always something to talk about. Let's talk about these superclusters, though, because you've been going around town, and we have here locally been talking about, we had a big story here the other day about Wendy over at the CFTC and how they're making some moves.
A $1 million venture capital fund, as well as another almost, $1 million for the innovation space.
Yep.
It's very exciting in cooperation and collaboration with the town of Cobourg and the police service.
Hub. They're not calling it a hub. They're calling it something else.
It's hub to me suggests that, you know, everybody's under this roof working on a project. It's not that. It's many things to many people depending on what they need and where they need it at the time of in the cycle of their innovation or their business that they're building. I think one of the really exciting things is that it is, we think typically of innovation as tactile. We think of it as manufacturing, you know, you're going to make a faster car or a bigger machine. But really innovation is in so many spheres. It's certainly technology, of course, but there's innovation around healthcare. There's innovation around environmental practices. There's just so many. And this... the flexibility that's being built in this allows for all of that.
Well, and innovation for resources as well. And
absolutely.
That could mean food. I mean, look at the innovation facility that it could be called an innovation facility that's in Cramie right now, where they're taking basically ugly fruits and vegetables and they're bringing them to market.
And all of these innovations and inventions and innovations are generally two different things. Sometimes they go together, but generally they're two different things. And it takes time, you know, from concept. And I think I said last Wednesday night when we made the announcement, the best and most brilliant ideas will not get anywhere without support.
True.
And that's what we're doing. We're accelerating their opportunities to move these processes forward.
Well, for the listeners that don't know, Venture 13, which is what they're calling this, aims to collaboratively connect entrepreneurs, startups, and high-growth SMEs with industry, academia, and investors on a pathway to commercializing innovation. The funding investment will result in the creation of up to 72 new full-time jobs and provide business expansions for up to 20 firms over 24 months. In addition, the town of Cobourg is pursuing multiple green tech pilot projects to provide energy to the facility and proof of concept of green technology supporting a pathway to commercialization and Canadian market adoption.
Imagine all of that in one space. And for the listeners, SMEs or small to medium-sized enterprises, I think one of the other things that is really exciting about this is, and you made the comment about sort of bringing business, academia, innovators together, which is extremely important. The other important piece to this, and it's been one of, I think, the hallmarks of the local CFDC and the work that they have done, is they have brought in experts. We have a lot of talent in this area, some of whom
sure
have
do.
Relocated from larger centers to semi-retire here, or retire, who are looking to contribute in some way. So we're, through the CFDC and through those programs, they're able to utilize the skill sets of those very talented people to help the entrepreneurs. I always said my youngest daughter at one point wanted to be a chef and have a restaurant. And so she just wanted to go to cooking school and become a chef. And I said, if your dream is to have a restaurant, the biggest failure of restaurants is not an amazing chef. It's someone who can't run a business. And that is the part for innovators. I was actually meeting with a local firm yesterday, very large firm, one of our best kept secrets, and you're going to hear more about them soon. But they've taken from a very small family-based local business. They're now all across the country. They're into the U.S. And there's a great news story there. What they recognized is they had a certain skill set in what they did, but in order to be who they want to be and grow where they want to grow, they had to bring in experts who had the skills they didn't do.
Right.
That's a sign, in my opinion, of a strong potential for entrepreneurs and growth of business.
Well, and that takes a lot of trust, too, on the part of that person because, you know, when you're bringing in experts, I mean, you know, you think about some of the great business successes. Tim Hortons, for instance, you know, an expert was brought in. He ended up taking over the operation and squeezing the one family out. Look at Ray Kroc at McDonald's, did the same thing. So there is concern on the part of entrepreneurs about bringing in experts. But when you connect with the right people, I mean, especially if you want to break into the import or export of your goods, if you want to send that abroad, maybe just to get into the U.S. market, you're going to need to bring in people to get you into that, across the threshold anyway, if not through the door.
And sometimes it is, one of the things that the government announced recently in Budget 2017 was something called a one-window approach in EDC, or Economic Development Canada. That is the place that businesses would go to explore those export opportunities. One of the challenges has been, and they're also tied to some funding in various aspects, but part of the challenge has been, what is it you really need? How do you get there? And sometimes you go through one door and it really should have been the other door or two doors down the hall. So this one window approach is an opportunity to be able to go through that door and to find out where all the pieces you need to be successful.
Right, exactly. And that's, and again, it takes those connections to be successful, to be able to have that one-stop shopping location for that sort of the big box approach to accessing government. That's obviously a key. We do have a caller on the line. We're going to take that call right now. Hi, welcome to the show.
Hello, hello.
How are you today?
I'm all right. How are you?
Pretty good. Is the river rising where you are? How high is the water, Mama?
4 feet high and rising.
What's going on, Ed?
It just brings me to one of my questions. I got two questions, if that's okay.
Absolutely.
Okay, first question. The high level of water down here, you know, I'd say, I don't know, once in 100 years or something like that, but we got a lot of trails that are washed out, a lot of boardwalks that are going to have to be replaced, a lot of damages that done all along the waterfront here. Is the federal government going to get involved in that? And the other question, rumors that I read were that the federal government is now going to be requesting that house sales be listed as income. Don't know if that's for tax or what the story is on that. So
first question. Sure. First question, with regard to the flooding, and Ed, last weekend I was over the last couple of weeks, I've been all through the riding, including the northern part of the riding around Keene and up towards Campbellford and towards Peterborough, and it's devastating. I mean, there are homes with Brighton, another example, and I know certainly in Coburg and Port Hope as well. So as a riding, we have significant issues with the flooding, and as you know, in Gatineau in Quebec, it was something they've never seen before.
Yeah.
So a couple of things. One, there is a process. The federal government stands ready. First of all, using Gatineau as the example, a number of years ago, three or four, I think, the former government decided that any time they called in an army in any kind of situation like this, that the province would be given a bill for the cost. So the Prime Minister came out a couple of weeks ago and said, no, absolutely not. There will be no bill back to the provinces. So I think that was good news for the provinces that have been affected, New Brunswick's another province. Ontario has not made the request to the provincial government yet. And it's Ontario that has to make the request. So how it goes is the municipality goes to the province. The province then puts forward a request and says, we need X for X. And then the federal government responds with the funds. But Ontario, to this point, has not requested it.
I see. Okay.
Yep.
I was just looking at, you know, the trail down by the lake here, mm-hmm. down by the old water treatment plant. It's all washed out. The beach is gone, you know.
I know.
And we got the same problem in Coburg, the beach.
Yeah, it's going to be mm-hmm. major money from the towns that's going to have to repair this stuff. You know, probably hundreds of thousands of dollars if you consider the boardwalk down at the end of Mill Street here. It's underwater, you know.
And I'm sure the municipalities are taking all of that into consideration.
Right.
And when the municipalities apply to the province, and the province will ask the federal government for the money under that envelope.
Well, I understand a lot of this was caused because of a problem where the water gets divided between going north and going south. Evidently, some of the, I don't know where it is, it's up around Bob Cajun or just a little north of Bob Cajun there, that some of the locks froze or got covered with debris and the water got, sent in a different direction than it should have.
I had not heard that. I do know that there was significant amount of runoff this year, and mm-hmm. of course we did have rain, and I understand that it's how the rain comes when the ground is saturated and the rain keeps coming. Yeah. So it was kind of funny. I was in Keene last weekend or the weekend before and speaking to the reeve of Otonabe South Monaghan, and he said, you know, the farmers, we can't get our fields ready to plant because they're just too wet. And we're going to be coming, with a smile on his face, he said, we'll be coming to the federal government. And I said to him, I said, well, if I remember correctly, you were coming to the federal government last year because you didn't have any rain.
There was no water, yeah.
So,
a dust bowl or a mud bog.
So it's good that in crisis like we've had, that we can all sort of maintain some degree of sense of humor, understanding the real challenges that that folks are having. And I know there have been communities coming together to help people do what they can to save their houses.
Yeah, and sandbagging going on down in Brighton.
There is, yes. Yeah. I have not been here to even help, but I know that lots of folks have been. On your question about the mortgage, there's a bit of misconception, and I'm sort of...
Yeah, something I read in the paper somewhere that people that sell their houses now have to declare the...
And it has to do more, I understand, with, people who've declared...
But is that in fact now?
Well, I believe it has been that way and it wasn't enforced. That's my understanding. I stand to be corrected. But I think part of it has to do, as I understand, with two things. One, do you remember that we have some benefits that are offered for first-time homebuyers? You know, you can sometimes get certain grants or take out your RSPs and get to repay them. This is to keep track of that. So it's not from, or if someone has more than one home, it will show up, because as you know, if you have two homes, one is considered a vacation home. But it's not, the purpose is not to tax your principal residence.
Okay, but office space inside the principal residence, is that...
That would... I'd suggest you ask an accountant about that. My understanding, as someone who's had that for many years, that it has doesn't have anything to do with it.
From what I've heard,
and again, this I could be wrong too, but my understanding is that if it's an income property and you sell it, then yes, it would be declared as income. But if it's your principal residence, then no. That's my understanding.
That's
there.
Correct.
But again, that is something you need to check with your tax accountant for, because it would only be considered income if it was an income property. In other words, it wasn't your principal residence. If you sell your principal residence, my understanding anyway in this country is that you don't pay tax on what you...
That's correct.
If you make any...
If you make any money. Most people don't, let's face it. Although, if you're selling in Toronto, you could make $500,000. Who knows?
Well, yeah, you know, not on commercial property in Port Hope, I'll tell you.
Well, I'm telling you, it's the same thing here as well. And most... It's funny, because we hear about the housing bubble, but it's not the same in the commercial property.
No, it's not even close.
Usually it's a couple of... two. I understand someone... I was at a recent meeting, and someone was telling me it's usually 2 or 3 years behind. Commercial is behind residential.
There you go.
Or maybe never.
Or maybe not.
Or maybe never. Thanks
all
for
right,
calling.
Well, thank you very much.
Take care, Ed.
Thanks, Ed.
Bye.
All right, so a couple of good questions from Ed right there on Trinity Local Radio. You're listening to The Drive Time. My guest in the studio is MP Kim Rudd. You're a member of Parliament for Northumberland Peterborough South. We'll be right back after this break.
Wake up to a new show on Saturday morning. It's called The Early Morning Wake Up. I'm Glenn McLaren, and I'll get you moving with some of the greatest hits from the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and new features like A Soulful Saturday Morning, The Best of Soul and R&B, and of course, Saturday Morning Fever, the best of disco from 75 to 79. And of course, your 7-day forecast and a Saturday sports wrap. That's the Early Morning Wake Up from 7 to 9 Saturdays on Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
When it comes to computers and the internet today, it's hard to know who and what to trust. When something goes wrong, you could call your daughter, your brother-in-law, that kid who mows the lawn, or you could call Computer Solutions, your neighborhood computer professional. Computer Solutions, located at 208 King Street East in Colborne, is open 6 days a week. They have ample parking and convenient hours, plus you can arrange to have your system picked up or dropped off right from your door. Call Computer Solutions today at 905-355-3622 or stop by their store in Colborne at 208 King Street East. Computer Solutions, your neighborhood computer professionals.
Northumberland 89.7 is radio to go. Listen to us on your smartphone wherever you are. Just go to Northumberland 89.7 and download the TuneIn app.
And welcome back to the show. My guest in studio is Kim Rudd. You're a member of Parliament for Northumberland, Peterborough South. You know, I forgot to play an intro song, and I usually play a song related to the conversation, so we'll have to play that at the end. We got Randy Newman lined up, so he's sort of my go-to political song guy. Anyway, so lots to talk about in natural resources. I mean, we've got, is there a trade war heading here from the South? I mean, Donald Trump's in a lot of trouble. I mean, he's going to have to try and score points anywhere he can. Is this going to be something you think he's going to use to score points, these trade wars that are on the pipe?
Well, you know, I would say that in politics, as in life, pretty well everything's a negotiation. So there are people working very hard behind the scenes, you know, at the official level, at the diplomatic level, as well as at the elected level, to find a way to forward on a number of things. You know, we're talking about, of course, they've triggered the 90 days to start the negotiation of NAFTA. That was not unexpected. There have been conversations going on to this point.
Yeah.
And modernizing a 30-year-old agreement probably makes some sense. And everyone, I think part of the challenge, Dave, is there's a lot of speculation. I'm not a big fan of speculation because mostly people speculate because of what they read in a news story, which, of course, is a very small nugget, if you will, that is appealing to someone writing the story or maybe some viewers or readers. In terms of, you know, we have the softwood lumber. We firmly have said that it is the duties are unfair. We are working within the scope of the supports we have with the sector. There's, in fact, Minister Carr is in New Brunswick on Friday hosting a roundtable for softwood lumber in New Brunswick. So lots of things are going on. We're constantly talking to the the folks who, the businesses in the softwood lumber sector. We've got dairy. We're clearly holding our line on supply management.
Mm-hmm.
So there's lots of.
Is that going to be something that we're going to be able to hold our line on, though, given what Maxime Bernier and a couple of other conservative leadership candidates have said? I mean, there are a couple there that are saying straight up, we got to get rid of it. And yet, when you look at it, I mean, one of the reasons why we don't have a glut in the dairy market in this country is because we supply and manage. The same thing with beef, the same thing with
Just look
poultry.
What happened in New Zealand when they did it 15 years
yeah.
ago. It was supposed to be this great panacea. And then now, if you talk to them, because of the sort of positioning that happened through the supply chain with distribution, with processing,
mm-hmm.
you've got a couple of big players, lost almost all the family farms. And remember, the average size of a dairy farm in Canada is 76 head.
Mm-hmm.
Not these multi mega units that happen in other countries. But what's happened in New Zealand now, they have a glut of milk in the spring and a shortage of milk in the summer.
Yeah.
That's not, I would venture to say that's not what Canadians want.
Well, it's severely problematic.
And the price is no different
that's
now.
That's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Severely problematic.
Mm-hmm.
And as you say, it's primarily being operated by large factory farms.
Mm-hmm.
They've basically killed off the small family farms. But that's what we have a lot of in this riding.
Very much so.
You know, what are you hearing? Are they concerned about what's happening? Are you hearing the concerns from the farmers locally?
I meet with the dairy farmers fairly often in Ottawa, and I mm-hmm. try and get around here in the summer when I'm here. And the response from them is they're feeling pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
The Prime Minister has very clearly come out and said we will support supply management. The Minister of Agriculture has said the same. And there is, and it's not just the supply managed farmers. And when we talk about the dairy farmers, you know, we talk about them as being supply managed, which they are, but we have to remember it's the feathers too. It's the turkeys and the chickens and the eggs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just dairy. And the broader agriculture sector likes the supply management process for a certain segment because it's stability within the agriculture sector, right?
That's what it is that they're embracing is that stability.
That's right.
Because
right? mm-hmm.
that was going to be my next question. What is it about supply management mm-hmm. that they enjoy?
Stability, and it's a supply chain that we know, mm-hmm. That we have a, you know, I like the fact that my milk comes from the average of a 76 herd farm.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right, you go around this riding and you will see lots of them. And I can't remember the name of them. They're out just north of Baltimore. I was there a couple of years ago. They have what they call, well, I would call state-of-the-art
mm-hmm.
farm. They have, the cows have back scratchers. Like the cows just sneak under them and they get their back scratched. I mean, like they're very, you know, remember, I don't know how, maybe you might remember the contented cow. Do you remember the Daisy the contented?
Daisy the cow, yeah, from Beatrice.
Well, that's right. Well, yeah. They're very contented.
Well, that's good to know. And I mean, as long as, see, again, you know, the problem, as far as I'm concerned, the whole NAFTA thing is a smokescreen because, you know, Donald Trump said, well, we're going to have to renegotiate NAFTA. And he raised a bunch of issues that, frankly, aren't covered by the NAFTA deal. Supply management and dairy is not in NAFTA.
Nor
softwood lumber is not in NAFTA. Neither is the latest bone of contention, this issue with Boeing and Bombardier.
Not in.
Those technological items, if we could use that word, they're not included in NAFTA. So
and as Minister Freeland said, this is a three-way negotiation, right? NAFTA is three countries.
No, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
I think there's a recognition that there's a lot of with any change of government. There's lots of people having to get up to speed. We've just been, our new ambassador has just been announced, and this is now six mm-hmm. months out. So we'll get to know her, and I have had the utmost respect for the former ambassador and his wife, who were in Canada for a very long time, Bruce and Vicky Heyman. And
who's the new ambassador?
I knew you were going to ask me that.
That's not Dick Cheney's daughter, right?
No.
Okay.
No.
I know she just got posted to a post somewhere around the world. But
no,
I can't remember where.
The new ambassador, I believe, comes from a background of charter schools. I could be wrong. I've been trying to keep track of everything.
You know what? You can't.
It's hard.
There's too many moving pieces. It's like playing 3D chess, only it's more like 3D checkers when you're dealing with Trump.
But when you my point was, when you have an ambassador to the U.S. in Canada, that is another opportunity and vehicle to have those discussions. And so looking forward to being able to do that.
Wow. Well, even the people that are negotiating these deals are saying that Canada's not the problem, right?
Certainly dairy farmers in Wisconsin came out and said it has nothing to do with Canada.
Well, you know what? And this is where it got hairy, because they were saying that some of the farmers in Pennsylvania were saying that, but some were agreeing with the farmers in New York State. And their concern, of course, is with this diet-filtered milk product, which I bring it up every time I have an opportunity to discuss trade with anyone, because this is a product that they themselves... This was a milk byproduct. My understanding
it was like powdered milk.
You know, and they don't even use it in the United States. No. They don't sell diet-filtered milk to their own residents, and yet they expect us to just take it. And they're dumping it here because it's a waste product for
them.
Right. So any money they make
off it. But we use it for cheese, you know? So now we're buying our own.
Yeah, well, we are processing our own.
Exactly.
That's the thing. And maybe that's what their concern is. Oh, we've stolen their idea. I mean, that's what Boeing was basically saying about Bombardier. You know, oh, you're dumping your product into our country cheaply.
Well, Minister Freeland has made her position pretty clear
Yes. I heard her yesterday talking about it. And, of course, today saying very much the same thing. And one of the things that came out yesterday when they were discussing this issue is the fact that that Boeing has all of their R&D covered by the Pentagon.
Yes.
Now, there's no one covering R&D for Bombardier in this country. They may have received some loans, and they were repaid back.
Yeah.
Unlike Boeing, which
there was a previous loan about 5 or 6, maybe a little longer, under the previous government that was given to Boeing, and Boeing paid it back.
Yep.
And now there's another loan, and Boeing will pay it back.
I said Boeing, I meant
Bombardier. Yeah.
Well, now this could affect sales of planes, but again, that's not in your wheelhouse, unfortunately. But when we talk about natural resources, there's been a lot of sort of pushback now, especially in British Columbia right now, where we don't know who the new premier is going to be. There, one side is saying that's the Greens and the NDP are both saying that they're going to try and close down Trans Mountain. They're not going to let it go through. Are you hearing anything about that? I know Alberta is saying you can't hold one province hostage over another.
Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic because the pipelines have been approved by the federal government. They cross provincial boundaries, so they are really under the purview of the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, provinces are going to have their own opinions, and depending on what happens with the government, and it's not just, I don't know that it's completely about who's in power in the government. I'm sure you will agree, as in any party, in any government, there are disparate views about things. Mm-hmm. And so it's not uniform.
No.
And so I think this will all play out. But from our perspective, we approved pipelines. We believe are in the national best interest. And hopefully they'll get built.
Hopefully we can get that product to market. Really,
that would be great.
Because at this point, I don't like to use the word, I use the word hostage quite a lot, frankly. But, I mean, right now our economy is being held hostage by a madman to the south, frankly. You know, we don't know from one day to the next what their new policies are going to be. And unfortunately, at this point, it really behooves us to expand our markets to different markets.
Absolutely. And that there's been a huge push on by Minister Champagne. I think you met him when he was here not that long ago, Francois Philippe. He, in terms of international trade, he and his parliamentary secretary, Pamela Goldsmith-Jones, have been doing that. The minister, my minister of natural resources, is taking the largest trade delegation on natural resources ever, and they're off to China in a week and a bit.
Well, now, so, you've been to China a few
times
in the last little bit.
Yes,
so.
The minister's going this time. And the trade mission is forestry, it's nuclear, it's oil and gas, it's the broad spectrum. Mm-hmm. Because we recognize that diversifying the economy and making sure that we have those opportunities is really important. So yes, the diversification is important. The trade is important, and if we look at the, was it yesterday, I think, that Canada, the EU, and China have all recommitted to the Paris Agreement. mm-hmm. and they are moving forward, clearly moving forward on this. The other piece is around the jobs and the increase in economic development in the what we'll call greener economy and mm-hmm. the innovation around I keep saying, as does do a number of people, the economy and the environment go hand in hand, and we're starting to see that uptick on some of these new technologies. So it's a huge job creator and economic benefit for Canada, so we are going to lead.
Right.
We're not going to follow.
Well, and the other thing, too, is the Trans-Pacific Partnership is still being negotiated, I understand.
So
the other partners have said, screw the Americans, we'll go without them.
Well, I don't know if that's what they said, but
what they're saying behind closed doors.
Okay.
I'm telling you, Kim.
So what they
when
have
there's
said,
no mics, there's no cameras, the expletives come out. I'm telling you.
what they've said is that they still see value in those that economic opportunity mm-hmm. for trade. So let's sit down and figure out how we can make it work as this group. You know, who knows? Someday the U.S. may want to come back in.
Yeah, who knows when sanity is restored. And one of the interesting points that was brought up last week, there was a guest in the studio whose name now just flew out of my head like a pigeon. He was talking, but this is a gentleman who's very familiar with trades, done a lot of work in South Central America. He was talking about the investor-state dispute mechanisms that you and I have talked about a lot. You know how I feel about them. In Australia, they have an interesting concept when it comes to those. They don't include investor-state dispute mechanisms in any of their trade deals. They tell people, buy insurance.
Ah, interesting.
Maybe that's the first time you've heard that.
It's the first time I've heard that.
Maybe that's something you can take back to the cabinet table.
There you go.
Because really, the idea that we are still being sued by multinational corporations because they want guaranteed access. I mean, look at Boeing. Boeing is essentially suing us under these trade agreements. Based on, you know, their own opinion in terms of what they think the value of a C-Series jet should be. But, I mean, this is a great opportunity for us to maybe look at what Australia and some of the other trade partners are doing, especially as we negotiate the finality of the TPP.
Well,
maybe we can get rid of those investor states.
Well, indeed, if that's something the other countries are doing, I would expect that there will be conversation about does it make sense for all of us to
mm-hmm.
do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I love it when someone comes up with a great idea and they're willing to share it.
Yeah.
And maybe we can make it better.
Well, again, if it can work, you know, because my problem with trade deals is always the same. I have no problem with removing barriers and trade tariffs. And there was a general agreement on tariffs and trade that have sort of gone the way of the buggy whip. But a lot of these deals, I mean, even the Trans-Pacific Partnership, 2/3 of the documentation in this deal has nothing to do with trade. There's 564 pages of the deal devoted to actual trade, moving products and goods. The rest of it, of the 6,000-page document, is about rights and property rights. And I mean, we live in a country where individuals don't have property rights, but we're guaranteeing those to corporations.
I just can't imagine the people who have to read through and analyze those 6,000 pages.
It's crazy. It'll take you months, by the way.
When I get my briefing documents to go on a trip or go overseas, and they're between 550 and 750 pages, I think that's a lot.
Yeah. Well, there's no Coles notes for it either.
No.
So, and you can download it. I really would urge you, if you have, you know, it makes great toilet reading. I'm just putting it out there. We're going to take a break. When we come back, more with Kim Rudd. She is your Member of Parliament for Northumberland Peterborough South. I'm Dave Glover. Stick around.
Blue Monday. Monday mornings have you feeling down? Join me, Ron Hyatt, for the Monday Mid-Morning Show and kick those blues to the curb. I'll be playing the music that you know and love. We'll have our music spotlight and Weird Laws segments and other fun surprises. That's the Monday Mid-Morning Show from 10 until noon. Heard here in Northumberland, 89.7. Truly local radio.
In keeping with the Indigenous Protocol, CFWN-FM, Northumberland 89.7, acknowledges that we are broadcasting from the traditional territory of the Mississauga Nation and the Alderville First Nation.
Why not come out and enjoy a fabulous movie-going experience at the Rainbow Cinemas?
Playing May 19th to May 25th, Diary of a Wimpy Kid, The Long Haul, rated PG, no free passes accepted. Guardians of the Galaxy 2, rated PG, and King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, rated 14A, no free passes accepted Friday to Monday.
Rainbow Cinemas are in the Northumberland Mall, 1111 Elgin Street West in Coburg. For showtimes, call 905-372-2000. 2444 or visit rainbowcinemas.ca.
Old Time Radio has a new home. Classic radio dramas, suspense, and comedies. Sunday evenings, 9 until midnight, here on Northumberland 89.7.
And welcome back to The Drive Time. My guest in studio is Kim Rudd, your Member of Parliament for Northumberland Peterborough South. And we are talking about what's happening. What's happening in Ottawa? What's happening with a lot of interesting stuff going on. Of course, trade, the NATO summit that's coming up, the G7 summit that's going to be happening very shortly. We are talking in this country about building an infrastructure bank. Now, the listeners know, they've heard me ad nauseum, I'm sure, talk about the fact that we already have an infrastructure bank in this country. It's called the Bank of Canada, and it built all of the infrastructure in this country from 1939, actually 33, got us through the Depression. It helped us build the Trans-Canada Highway. It helped us build the St. Lawrence Seaway. Every major bridge between us and the United States was financed through the Bank of Canada, and yet we have a federal government right now that, for whatever reason, doesn't want to use the Bank of Canada. They want to instead create an infrastructure bank that's going to allow the same Wall Street. I mean, I've looked at the list of people that are being utilized as experts for this deal. And you can just connect the dots to the financial meltdown of 2008, 2009. It's the same operators. Why would we put our economy in banks into the hands of the same guys who
they haven't hired any of the people yet to run the infrastructure bank?
No, these are the consultants they're using. This is all part
To set it up.
Yeah, they're using the same consultant. It's not that they weren't consultants back then. They were, of course, big wheels in the financial sector who helped the wheels come off the bus.
BlackRock and others.
Yeah. So, I mean, you have to. I mean, as a Canadian, we own our own bank. I mean, you and I have said this before. If we owned our own bank and needed a house or a roof repaired, we would just borrow from our own bank.
So, a couple of things. One, companies like organizations like BlackRock and others that have informed this this process has been going on for a long time, trying to figure out the best way. And you know, everyone has an opinion. I think from everything I've seen, and maybe I've seen different things or been, my access is to different information.
Well, it would be. You're in government.
Yes.
I'm basing my opinion on the Bank Act and what the rule of law in this country was.
There's been a very strong due diligence done on the concept and the process to set up the infrastructure bank. The infrastructure bank will be for 8% of the total infrastructure we're looking at, and the investors, if you will, like the teachers' pension plan and others, very strong. Because someone told – I was actually asked this question. The Ontario Teachers Fund, that was the Ontario one, actually does more of their investing offshore than they do in Canada. And we want them to bring that investing back to Canada, help invest and build infrastructure here.
Yeah, but like any other investor, they're looking for a solid return on their investment, which means that whatever they invest in is going to have to generate a revenue so that they can, in fact, make a dividend. People hate paying for the 407. They hate paying the toll. We built that highway, sold it for pennies on the dollar. But that's what we're going to be doing, though. We're building a brand-new bridge right now to Detroit. Who's getting the toll dollars from that? Right now, it would come to the taxpayers because we're building that bridge. If it were done through an infrastructure bank, then that would be a profit-sharing venture with private investors.
Well, as I understand it, the makeup of each project would be different according to what it is. And, I hear this sometimes that people are saying, well, this is going to be too. There's nothing there right now that says any of that. Mm-hmm. If you were an investor, and I just talked about the $1 million in venture capital fund we have just created for Northumberland, for Northumberland County. So if an investor has X number of dollars in there and they invest in a company, that company is going to pay them, double the current rate, so maybe 5% or 6% interest. And when that loan is paid off, then they take that money and they invest it somewhere else, having made that 5% or 6%. That's how it works.
Okay, so that sounds great for investors, but, for taxpayers.
It leverages, as taxpayers, it leverages money for us to be able to do more. Mm-hmm. So the Infrastructure Bank is looking at, as I understand it, big projects. As an example, the rail line between Edmonton and Calgary, the expansion of the VIA between Toronto and Ottawa, things like that. So that's sort of separate and aside from the infrastructure that you're going to hear me announcing
right.
very shortly.
But we can do the same thing through the Bank of Canada at 0 to 1% interest. All of the revenue generated would come right back to our coffers. It would be a benefit, win-win for all taxpayers, a benefit for the federal government, and we wouldn't have to worry about whether or not we're satisfying the desires and needs of shareholders. Because let's face it, shareholders aren't going to spend the money to invest in projects they don't think are going to be profitable. Right? That's the bottom line. If we look at the St. Lawrence Seaway, if we had relied on an infrastructure bank where someone is demanding a return on their investment, we may not have ever built St. Lawrence Seaway or the Welland Canal or even the Trans-Severn.
But I guess this is where I'm sort of maybe taking a different view of this,
mm-hmm.
is that if I went to the bank and borrowed money to buy a car,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to pay them my principal and interest.
Yep.
And that is their profit, if you will, the money I'm paying interest. They don't expect any kind of additional piece of my car.
Well, of course not.
Right. So infrastructure bank, if it operates like a bank,
mm-hmm.
it's you lend money to build a project, you pay a certain percentage, and when that deal is done, we move on and we mm-hmm. use it for another project. So I guess I think that it's two different things being talked about. One is an investment in a project as a shareholder, mm-hmm. which is not the plan of the infrastructure bank.
Yeah, but they're not going to invest simply in the infrastructure bank if they can't determine where those funds are going.
They're looking for a solid return. Right. So
it's like borrowing money from a CFTC, quite frankly, at this what the infrastructure bank would offer. I mean, to borrow money from the CFTC, mm-hmm. you've got to pay whatever the interest rate is. The CFTC's position is, well, they are the lender of last resort, which, I mean, in this economy right now, getting a loan from any financial institution's like, you know, giving up your firstborn. So mm-hmm. the fact that they would be considering themselves a lender of last resort, in my opinion, really doesn't bode well for them, right? Because they're not really the lender of last resort. For a lot of entrepreneurs and businesses, they're the first option. That's the first place I would look if I was mm-hmm. looking to set up a business or a venture at this point. I wouldn't be going to any of the chartered banks because they're going to be wanting too much for the investment. The CFTC, who is getting, you know, lots of money through the federal government at this point, is lending the federal government money.
And getting a return in a percentage.
And a percentage. The percentage, in my opinion, doesn't need to be as high as it is. But again, that's my opinion. The point with the fact that we already own an infrastructure bank is it locks the government in, because one of the benefits, in my opinion anyway, of borrowing from the Bank of Canada is that you have a year to pay it back. So you can borrow up to 33% of your total income as a government. So whatever the government's income is, you can pretty much guarantee it's going to be more than whatever their interest rates are, because they're already covering billions of dollars in interest, right? So as long as they're locked in. So that means at the end of the year, they know at the beginning of the year they're borrowing X dollars. At the end of that fiscal year, they're going to have to pay back X dollars. And that money is 100% going to be going into projects that are 100% owned. And we're building capital now in our nation. We're also building stability. We're also creating jobs. And it's a total win-win. The only argument I've ever heard against the Bank of Canada, and it's the same argument everyone puts forth, is that if you borrow money, by creating money, the government then is going to increase inflation.
Mm-hmm.
We gave $363 billion to the banks in this country when they had the economic meltdown. We created that money and gave it mm-hmm. to the banks. We didn't create inflation. As a matter of fact, inflation is still struggling to be at the 2.5% that the government wants it to be at.
We need it to be at. Mm-hmm.
So it's that myth has been shattered. The idea that the government creating actual money and increasing inflation is a myth, right? It's been shattered. So what I would ask then, maybe, and I know a lot of the listeners out there are saying the same thing when they're sitting here, because I've spoken about this quite often, is maybe that's something that you can take back to the caucus.
I will be happy to
say
ask
to
the
them,
question.
You know, because even Prime Minister Trudeau, Pierre Elliott Trudeau, said in the 1980s, that it was perhaps the worst thing he'd ever done in his political career. He's actually been quoted as saying that. That was possibly his biggest mistake as prime minister. Because he wasn't an economist.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically got talked into joining. Because, again, this was all about if Canada wants to be on the world stage and be an international economic player, they're going to have to sign on to the same group that everyone else belongs to, the Bank of International Settlement, the International Monetary Fund. If you want to play with the big boys, you're going to have to play by these rules. But we're the only country in the world that owns its own bank. The only country. It's us in Wisconsin.
Well, I will get an explanation and bring it back next time I come.
I appreciate that. Anyway, so much else going on, though. I mean, natural resources. I was talking to my brother-in-law. You know, he's in the mining sector.
Yes.
And he's very happy about some of the rules that are being reinforced. There were some rules that were...
Flow-through
share financing. That was going to expire.
It was. And I was with the minister when he announced it at PDAC, at the Prospectors and Developers Conference. And it's the largest in the world. It was almost 25,000 people there.
Yeah, actually, this year was a record.
Yes.
This year was a record.
Yes. It was very exciting. So he was able to announce the tax credits and flow-through shares were going to remain. And so there was a lot of big smiles in the house, for sure.
There would have been.
In the building. And commodity prices in some areas have seen an uptick.
Mm-hmm.
I just spoke at the 2017 Mineral Outlook last week in Ottawa at their closing reception, and there was a real you can feel the difference, and that's what they tell me, that the PDAC conference this year had a very different feel than it did the year before.
And had my brother-in-law actually said this. He said there was something about it when you walked in, because I've been to PDAC a few times, and I was there, but just before and then right at the beginning of the economic meltdown, and it was not as buoyant this year, apparently. He said there was an audible, there was actually a spring in the air, not just a spring in the step, but an actual spring in the air that people had sort of, it was like this sort of Damocles had been lifted, and all of a sudden things were going to be a lot better. And of course, you know, a lot of people assuming that that's because of the new government, but you guys have already been in power for some time.
And a year and a half.
So I guess they were thinking to themselves, oh my God, after the first year, who knows what's going to happen? But no, it's so far it's worked out.
And we've been able to, we work at Natural Resources very closely with all of our sectors, but mining, we have a whole minerals and metals division, as we do with nuclear, oil and gas. And particularly that division has really, really embrace some of the opportunities around clean technologies.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, probably know, there's going to be a mine that is electrified, that their transportation system in the mine is electrified.
That's
a
cool.
Big deal.
Yeah, yeah.
There's also recognition. So when I was in Nevada a few weeks ago, 15 Canadian mining companies operate in Nevada.
Yes, they do.
And they come to Canada for our expertise. When the world wants to talk mining, they come to Canada.
That's right.
Sudbury is the mining capital of the world. It is. I was up there at Laurentian University speaking at their research week or innovation research week. And they're really looking at becoming a supercluster in mining. And good for them. I mean, obviously, there's a lot more than just us saying, oh, that'd be a really good idea.
Yeah. Well, don't forget, I mean, there's the rare earth elements that are in that area, plus all of the, you know,
I have a little story I have to share with you and your listeners before our time is up. There was a grade 4 or 5 class in, I think it was Guelph, and they were studying geology, as grade 4s and 5s would at that level. And so they were studying mining. So they all wrote letters to the minister with questions about mining. You know, is it safe? Why do we need it? Is it a whole bunch of questions? So I did the call. We set up a Skype call for me and the students, and they brought in the teachers' council. The principal was there, the teachers. So these students introduced themselves and they read their questions. It was amazing. There was, they had great questions. But interesting, when one person said, well, why do we need mining anyways? Because the vision is my grandfather from 1943 with the miner's hat working in the mines up in Timmins. I mean, people still have that vision of mining where it is so much more. Mm-hmm. At PDAC, I got to use the robot. It was very, very cool. But I said, how many of you, because I could see them, because I said, how many of you have an iPhone? Half the class. How many of you have an iPad? Almost the whole class. How many of you have a TV and watch TV? Everybody. I said, do you know you couldn't have any of that if it wasn't for mining?
Mm-hmm.
They didn't understand the relationship. And to them, that was an aha moment. So when I was able to talk, they said, well, what happens when the mine leaves? It sort of leaves dirty, not very nice ground and in grade 4 or 5 language. And I said, you should do some research. I said, the reclamation, putting the land back to where it was, is something the mining sector, the oil and gas sector, mm-hmm. are extremely proud of in the work they do. So they got a different view of mining. But how exciting is that? Great 4 and 5 students.
It's true. Well, you know the miners say at PDAC, if you can't grow it, you got to mine it. We're going to take our last break. When we come back, we'll wrap it up with Kim Rudd. And just a reminder, joining us at the top of the hour, of course, Rob Washburn. And our guest this afternoon is Sherry Gibson from Alnwick Township. And she'll be joining us and Rob at 6 o'clock. We'll be back after the break.
Hi, this is Andrea Johnson. I'm very happy to announce that with my husband, David Long, we have created Northumberland 89.7's first husband and wife radio show. Isn't that right, David?
That's right, Andrea.
Every Wednesday from noon until 1, we will be discussing life, relationships, and all things great. Isn't that right, David?
That's right, Andrea.
So join us and our many guests as we chat candidly about true life events, struggles, and experiences. You can do the next part, David.
Thanks, Andrea. The Soul Kitchen, noon until 1 every Wednesday. Radio for the heart and soul on Northumberland 89.7. Should be local radio.
Spring is here. It's the most wonderful time of the year. But is your AC ready for the hot summer days that are coming soon? A precision tune-up might be just what the doctor ordered. And right now, it's only $59.99 when you subscribe to a Climate Care We Care maintenance plan. Give yourself home comfort peace of mind. Call Northumberland's home and personal comfort expert, Pritchard's Climate Care, right now. 905-885-8216 or visit us at PritchardMechanical.com.
The music you like is the music we play. Listen to Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
And welcome back to the broadcast. You're listening to The Drive Time. This is Canada's only holistic political chat. And with me is Kim Rudd. And I guess we'll have you back. We're not sure when you're free. You're going to have a busy summer coming up, don't you? You're going to be all over the place.
I am up in, well, I'm going up to Ottawa tomorrow, coming back on the 5 a.m. train, 5:30 a.m. train to get back for a big announcement in the riding on Friday morning. Mm-hmm. I'm in Ottawa for 4 weeks straight, which means I'm only home on Saturdays, so that doesn't work. But you know what? When I get back, maybe just before or after Canada Day would be good.
Yeah, it would be good.
Let's do that. I'm looking forward to Canada 150 in the riding. Lots of exciting things going on. I hope people are going to participate and share with their family and their friends. And
well, and the HMSC, Goose Bay, is coming to Cobourg, apparently.
Too. I heard that's pretty exciting.
I guess we don't have to worry about the harbor not being deep enough, do we?
But I have to tell you, my grandson last summer, he came out with me on, we had a minesweeper, if you remember, in the harbor. He came out with me. Well, it sort of tweaked a little bug in him, and he's up at Nipissing in criminology. He applied and has just been accepted for the reserves. He starts in September. He works with them as a driver in the Army on the weekends, and he's very excited. But one of the things that sort of propelled him there was that trip out in the boat.
And he wants to go to the Navy, does he?
Well, he's not sure about that, but he wanted to experience the armed forces in some way. And given he's in North Bay at Nipissing, the Army's it.
Good call. Well, Kim, thanks again for being here. And as I say, Rob Washburn is joining us in the next hour. And always a pleasure to have you here. Maybe we'll get you and Kathleen Wynn in here on the same day. We'll be back, listeners. Here is Randy Newman.
No one likes us. I don't know why. We may not be perfect, but heaven knows we try. But all around, even our old friends put us down. Let's drop the big one and see what happens. We give them money, but are they grateful? No, they're spiteful and they're hateful. They don't respect us, so let's surprise them. We'll drop the big one and pulverize them. The Asia's crowded, Europe's too old, Africa's far too hot, and Canada's too cold. South America stole our name. Let's drop the big one, there'll be no one left to blame us. We'll save Australia. Don't wanna hurt no kangaroo. We're building all American amusement park there. They got surfing too. Boom goes London, boom Paris. More room for you and more room for me.
set everybody free. You wear a Japanese kimono, baby, be Italian shoes for me. They all hate us anyhow, so let's drop the big one now. Let's drop the big one.